MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
South Africa's supersize executive has long been a point of contention, many critics arguing that excessive government spending hinders economic progress. Now the party Action SA is taking a firm stance, proposing legislation to eliminate the role of deputy minister, arguing that the money should be redirected to essential services. My question, is this a practical cost-cutting measure or maybe just a populist move ahead of the election? I'm in conversation now with parliamentary leader of Action SA, Trollope. Athol, a very warm welcome. So you've framed this as a cost-saving measure, but isn't the whole idea of the big cabinet necessary to appeal and to appease all parties in the GNU?
Jeremy, thanks very much. I think your introduction said it all, except for the fact that we've just had an election. So this is the perfect time to deal with this matter. We couldn't have the budget table 2 weeks ago because they couldn't make the numbers balance. So what we have to do is we need to start saving and cutting costs and being exemplary. Now, the big issue was 2% VAT increase, and we're saying cut the fat and leave the VAT as it is. And we have the biggest cabinet in the world. There are many countries with double our population and more with a much bigger GDP, and they have many less cabinet ministers. We have 32 cabinet ministers and 43 deputy ministers. And the Constitution says in Chapter 93 that the President may appoint. Our deputy ministers have no constitutional powers, so we believe that they're completely superfluous and we could save a billion plus rand by getting rid of them and all their perks and all their entourage.
So if you're pushing to remove deputy ministers, why not go the full hog, address the issue of bloated government when it comes to advisors, consultants and other excess spending?
We're doing exactly that in our proposed members' legislation, that we, for example, ministers and deputy ministers have free housing. Why should they have free housing? I live in Cape Town during the week. I pay for my own housing and I pay for my own home at home. Why should ministers who earn a whole lot more have that free benefit?
So the question might be, Athol Trollope, if deputy ministers were to be removed, who would handle their responsibilities? Would it not just shift the workload elsewhere without actual real savings?
You know, Jeremy, this is just one of the saving mechanisms that we're saying, and we believe that it will lead by example to say we are prepared to cut our own cloth at executive level to give an example to the rest of the country.
Politically, though, is this realistic for the government of national unity right now? Back to my initial question, which says that there are so many people inside that tent and that compromise and unanimity needs to be achieved.
Well, surely it can't be about individuals and who gets a position. It shouldn't be about putting the country first. And the cabinet isn't that much bigger after the GNU than it was before. So I really don't see why we need to have a cabinet that size. It's not about accommodating individuals. It should be about putting South Africans first.
How much support do you think you would get for a move like this?
Well, you know, we've got two bills, one about zero corruption and the other cutting the size of the cabinet. And if parties vote against it, they'll either be voting against cutting corruption and against leading by example. So I think they're going to find themselves between a rock and a hard place.
Are there specific ministries where you believe deputy ministers are either completely redundant or maybe add some value, or is this just a blanket proposal?
You know, during the Eastern DRC debacle, we saw that having ministers, deputy ministers, meant very little. We were questioning the Minister of Defense, and with her was a deputy minister of defense who was a general previously. He had nothing to say. He had no authority to speak. He had nothing, no input to make in the debate. So that illustrates why we believe that they're completely superfluous, all of them.
Do you not believe that some portfolios are more important than others? I'm thinking of finance, for instance.
Well, why would you need a deputy minister of finance? We've got two deputy ministers of finance, and they couldn't get the budget right. And also, both of them have traveled much more overseas than the minister himself. The minister has spent 2 million rand traveling. They've spent nearly 6 million rand traveling abroad.
So could eliminating deputy ministers possibly create power vacuums that would make ministries less effective and slower in decision-making, given that the decisions are often slow in the first place?
I think they would have the opposite effect. I think they're slow now because there's just too many people. There's too much bureaucracy. It's bloated. The less cabinet ministers and deputy ministers you have, the more agile the government would think. That's the objective, to have an agile, reactive government that can work quickly.
Athol, I absolutely acknowledge that it is an issue, but and it's not the first time, as I mentioned at the start of this conversation, that it has been raised before. But there's also the argument that it maybe is a distraction from real economic imperatives. Again, is this a real priority over bigger policies that would directly impact job creation? You're grabbing the headlines with this, and I acknowledge that, but surely it's a drop in the ocean.
Well, look, I think, you know, every drop adds to the ocean, and leading by example is a very good way to go. And the other private members legislation that we tabled yesterday was zero tolerance of corruption. Now, there's a lot of lip service paid to corruption, but when it comes to actually doing something about it, we don't see anything being done. So we believe that we need to be seen to be doing something. So cutting the cabinet size is a really positive step. Secondly, zero tolerance for corruption, and adding that if you are found guilty of corruption over 500,000, that there'd be a minimum sentence of 15 years, and that there will be blacklisting of companies and individuals and elected public representatives never to be able to serve or to do business with government in the future. Those are kind of really bold initiatives that show that we're serious about the things that hold us back as a nation. And corruption is one of the biggest hurdles that we have, especially impacting the poor people of this country.
Given that it's going to be difficult to get this over the line for all the obvious reasons, and if the proposal fails, is Action SA going to push for deeper public service reforms, or is this just a one-off campaign?
No, most definitely we will be pushing for deeper and more comprehensive administrative reforms, but we need to start with ourselves. We need to start with Parliament and members of Parliament and members of Cabinet. And that's why it's going to be very difficult for these other parties not to support our legislation, because if they don't vote for a zero tolerance of corruption piece of legislation, they would then be endorsing it. So I think they're going to be caught between a rock and a hard place.
Athol Trollope, thank you very much indeed, the parliamentary leader of Action SA.